This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show, number 52. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampas from Australia. Coming up on the show, we have a chat with Gary Palmer. We also have a chat with Mano Gazzandam. And as usual, we answer your questions for this week. David, let me tell you about my cricketing adventures over the week.
Oh yeah, how are you doing?
It's probably the most intense cricket game I've ever played in, David. As I mentioned last week, we needed either 4 wickets to win or the other team needed 40 runs to win. And so, juniors at the crease, we thought we'd rip through them and we'd be into number 10 and 11. Well, it wasn't as easy as we thought. I opened the bowling and the kids really took me apart. I thought that they'd be a piece of cake, so I try to bowl short to them, and I think my instincts took over, and them being kids with no fear, they just took me apart. And yeah, basically after that, our captain brought on a few of our slower bowlers, and they got all 4 wickets for us. And after that, instead of just taking the wins, the points from the first innings, David, our captain decided to try and go for outright, so go in there, get some quick runs, and then put the opposition back in. So we went and got about 110 really quick runs from about 30 overs. With about 20 overs to spare, our captain made probably the most aggressive declaration I've ever seen. He sent them back in. He consulted me and a few other senior players, of course, and we thought maybe we have a chance to pull off, if ever, we could pull off an unlikely victory for the 10 points. So we started really well, David, with our bowling. We got 5 really quick wickets, but one of the openers was still in, and towards the end he really took us apart. So needing 6 and over, David, my captain decided to bring me on, and for the first 3 overs of my spell I bowled pretty tight, only giving away 2 runs and over. And in the end it got so tight they needed 12 runs from the last over to win, and it really got heated towards the end because they were accusing us of time wasting when we were just trying to get our fields right. Because after 6:15, even if there's 5 overs left, we have to call the game off because that's the time, that's the cutoff time, because we all bowled a set amount of overs. And so they were arguing with us. We were trying to talk back, saying whatever. But in the end, with 1 over to go, they need 12 runs. And we brought one of our slow bowlers on. And luckily, we only gave 7 runs off that over. And we won it in amazing fashion. But it was probably the tensest game I played, David. And just to show how close it was, they needed, in the end, they were 5 runs short of victory and we were 2 wickets short of victory. So it really could have gone either way. But I think our captain really did something good for the game by making that bold declaration, David.
Yeah, that's very exciting. So just for people who are listening who aren't quite clear on the format of your games, because you won the first innings, you bowled them out for less than runs than you got. Then you'd already won the game, just on the basis of that, right? So the second innings, then it became almost like a one day game where they had to get the required runs and you had to stop them getting the required runs. So it was a bit of a risk. If they'd have got those runs, you would have lost out quite badly.
Yeah, we would have. Well, we would have just got our 7 points as we should have, but they would have gotten a lot more points than. Basically, we were giving the team coming last a massive boost to the top 4, which was a big risk, but it was a risk our captain was willing to take, which was good in the end, which gave us a lot of sort of experience in tense situations.
Well, I think that's a good decision. I like that. I like that. It's good cricket. It gets everyone involved in the game, and that's what it's all about. There's no point in playing safe. You might as well go for it. What have you got to lose?
Exactly, David. And that's exactly why I love the sport, because there's situations like these that can sort of make or break a game, that keeps you so tense that it was just amazing. And all the defensive players in the team at the end were really critical of the captain, but I just loved that he was brave enough to make a big decision like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also played some 2020 cricket at the weekend.
Yeah, that's right, David. I played in a competition called Last Man Stands, and the game is played with a pink ball, David. I don't know if you heard much about the pink balls played around the world nowadays, but this was the first time I played with a pink ball, and it was just weird because it didn't feel like a normal ball at all. Yeah, we batted first, David. We got about 110, which we thought was really under par. But if we bowled tight, we could have sort of restricted them to a little bit less. But they got 110 in about 13 overs, which wasn't really great bowling from us. I thought I bowled pretty economical. I only gave away about 4 runs an over, while a lot of our spinners and the other bowlers got smashed. But they were all young players, which was fair enough.
So you enjoyed the experience. You're going to do it again?
Yeah, I think I'll be going back this week as well to play, because it's a 2-month-long tournament. But it definitely, I reckon, will teach me a lot about my game as well.
And we have some Pitch Vision news as well for people who are listening who visit the site at pitchvision.com. As you know, we do Pitch Vision Academy, where we do coaching courses. Well, we've just launched a new one for players and coaches who want to know a little bit more about umpiring, because they have to do it now and again, but they don't want to go on a full, you know, get a full umpiring course qualification. They just want to sort of understand the basics a bit more clearly and get the sort of tips of how to sort of give an LBW correctly and things like that. So we've launched a course for that, and also we've released an ebook, which is a bit of a stretch for what we normally do. It's by the guy who was the Indian team analyst in the 2003 World Cup, and he's written a diary of what happened in the dressing room and all the plans that the Indian team made over the 2003 World Cup campaign. And that ebook's available at pitchvision.com/academy to download and read and sort of get the insight, the locker room insight into a campaign that almost took India to the championship, and it did take them to the final in 2003.
Well, we have this week a new segment on the show where we pick the brains of our batting coach, Gary Palmer. Gary Palmer was a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps young players in the game with CCM Academy. If you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer.
Well, welcome to the show, Gary.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing again?
Good, thanks. Yes, we've got a batting question this week. And
right.
Here it comes. I've been told a trigger movement back and across would help my batting, as I've been bowled through the gate on a couple of occasions this season. I've also been told that the swing of my bat isn't perfectly straight when driving. Would having a more open stance help this?
Well, first of all, obviously you've got to start with your backswing and setup, so we'll address that first. Yes, a slightly more open shoulder position in the stance would help align the bat to where you want to hit the ball. What generally tends to happen is people or batters tend to stand slightly too sideways, and therefore when they pick the bat up, it goes over middle and leg, and the ball's pitched on middle and leg stump. They tend to play around their front pad and hit across it with a sort of rounded swing, as opposed to just opening the, you know, with the shoulders more open, the head goes at the ball. As the shoulder adjusts, the bat goes with it, and the bat generally will swing a straight line from backswing to the target area. And I'm on the back and across movement, I'm a firm believer that that is the best way of doing it. Because if you're up against real pace, if you take a bigger step back and across, it gives you that split second longer to decide whether you're going to stay there or go forward again. And if you're playing against a medium pace, you're swinging in and out late. If you go back and across and just wait before you then plant your front foot down, and obviously the back and across gives you that little bit more time before you do that. When the foot does go down, for instance, if it's a left arm swing bowler swinging it into the right-handed batsman, if you go back and across slightly and allow the ball to swing, you're already slightly more open, and then as the ball, you picked up the line and you make your final movement, you put your foot down. As long as your feet are in a straight line, as opposed to your front foot being across the line of your back foot, you should be able to swing the bat in a straight line towards the ball from backswing to the finish position. You just adjust the shoulder to where you want to hit it.
So it's not just the stance itself that that would fix that problem. You have to look at the whole setup and where the back lift's going and how the bat's coming back down again, rather than just having opening your stance a little bit.
I mean, some people could stay as long as, you know, if they're sort of normal sideways position, as long as they're aware they need to pick that bat up out over off stump or slightly wider than that, then you can get at the ball. But obviously opening the shoulder, as soon as you open your shoulder, your bat is going to go towards off stump more. And the key thing is, if the bat is over off stump or even for a slip, you can bring it down in a loop and play straight really well. You can play off your legs really well. But you must remember that when you go to play a cover drive, as his head and shoulder go towards the ball, that backswing has to align over leg stump, fine leg, before it swings towards extra cover or cover to play a shot. So that's quite important, as the bat and the shoulders should really work as one to swing in a straight line to the target area. I mean, the other thing with backing across, it's very, very, a lot of people think that you can, the best thing to do is stand still. I don't know if you've watched golfers when they go to address the ball. Very few of them just stand there with a club still, or a snooker player going to hit the white ball. There's always a little bit of movement that tends to loosen you up, relax your arms. And I think with batting, the longer you stand really still, the more tense you become, and you tend to move a bit too early and you're a bit rigid and it all goes wrong. But I think if you just got that little back at a cross where you're in between the two, you could push back again or you could go forward. You're sort of on your toes, a bit more relaxed and in a better rhythm to move to play the shot. Standing still, unless you're a legend who can pick the ball up just like that, it's very few people can do. Very difficult. I know a lot of people like to do the forward press. I think the forward press done to a quick bowler is a bad movement, because most people that forward press will forward press to the offside and their front foot will go across the line of their back foot, as we spoke about earlier, and you'll get closed off and you'll hit around the ball. And the other thing is, if someone digs it in and you've already stepped forward first, by the time you step back to go onto the back foot again, because your front foot's across the line of your back foot, you can get two sideways, and then it makes you vulnerable to the short ball because you're two sideways on and there's a blind spot there. The only time the forward press for me is probably a useful move is against a spinner. But even then, I'd be thinking, look to get forward. And if you think look to get forward, the chances are that you'd step forward anyway. I think if you're thinking to pick up and step, it's just a little bit too prejudged and not such a good movement.
If you want tips and drills from Gary Palmer, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. We have this week another interview with Manu Gazandam, and this week we have the first part of our interview. Manu has authored an ebook that consists of 120 pages of tips and tricks for spinners. So if you're a spinner or a coach of spinners, then Spin Bowling Tips is the most comprehensive guide to spin bowling out there. So go to www.pitchvision.com/academy.
Hi Manu, welcome to the show.
Hi David.
So the first question probably on everybody's lips who's listening to this is, who are you and why do you know so much about spin bowling?
Right, currently a Premier League club cricketer in South Africa, and I've been bowling spin ever since I played cricket, so I'm not a recent bowler to spin. I played a lot of junior representative cricket in South Africa. I reckon that's equivalent to the UK's county, junior county system. I'm a handy batsman, but mostly I've always been picked as a spin bowler. And I played in the UK, Essex League. I played as a club's foreign player, once again as a spin bowler for 2 seasons a few years ago. And over the years, I've coached many junior cricket players and many school teams. Currently, I'm not actively coaching anymore but I focus now mainly on producing online coaching material for spin bowlers.
So spin must be a real passion for you. I've noticed this. I think this is a trait that spinners and wicketkeepers both have. They seem to be more passionate about the subject than any other cricketing subject. Do you find that?
Yeah, I reckon it's because you're a bit of a niche market and you get a bad rep sometimes in lower level cricket that a spin bowler is always easy to play, which is not true. It's just because it's a bit easier to bowl, and any batsman who wants to bowl a bit or just turns his arm over and bowls a bit of spin. And so that's why it gives spin bowlers a bad name. We love it. We love the sort of the art aspect of it. Sort of outthinking the batsman. It's a completely different ball game than fast bowling, obviously. And I reckon that's why we group together.
So let's talk about some more technical things now. And let's start with length. What would you say the ideal length is for a spinner to bowl?
Right, ideal length, whether you're an off spinner or leg spinner, this would be the same, is always to get the batsman on the front foot. Always get him driving at the ball. The reason for this is if you get the batsman playing on the back foot, he has a lot of time to see the ball turn. Has a lot of time to see which way the ball is going and react to where the ball is going. If you get him on the front foot, and once again, don't get him on the front foot where it's half volley, just bowl short of a half volley. Main reason for this, it gives the ball enough time to turn, but the batsman doesn't have enough time to react to the turn. So get him driving. If you're an off spinner, you can bowl the ball through the gate. If you're a leg spinner, you can take the ball past the bat. But most important thing, always get the batsman driving. He's playing an attacking shot. He might not get his head in line, and it gives the ball time to turn.
That must take quite a lot of confidence to believe in yourself enough to think that I'm going to try and make the batsman attack me, because a lot of spinners are scared of that, aren't they?
Definitely, and that is a problem, and that's why you'll get negative spin bowlers, I guess. But a quality of all good spin bowlers is that they've got confidence in their ability. And I reckon, without getting off the topic, it's a problem where captains don't really support spin bowlers, because a spin bowler will go for more runs, and he would want to not have a batsman defend him, but actually attack him. That's how a spin bowler gets his wicket, just by enticing the batsman to play attacking shots against him. So you've got to develop that confidence. It does take time, and you might have to turn a blind eye to the fact that you might get thrashed the covers three balls in a row, but that's okay. Spin bowler is not there to take wickets every ball. You're there to try and work out the batsman, have him play attacking shots, and maybe hit you for three fours, but then get his wicket.
So with that in mind, thinking about confidence and being an attacking spinner, what would you say the three most important pieces of advice you could give to a young spinner who's just taking up the art?
I can give you one, which I'll repeat three times, and that is the spin bowler needs to spin the ball as hard as possible, as hard as possible, and as hard as possible. That, I can't emphasize that enough for a young spin bowler getting hold of the art for the first time. The reason I say spin the ball as hard as possible is because too many spin bowlers, young guys, get into the game and then the coaches tell them, focus on line and length, which is good. But the problem is that once you start focusing on line and length and you get that right, it's very difficult to then start spinning the ball hard, because you don't want to lose that line and length that you've created. Whereas if you take it from the other side and first start spinning the ball as hard as you can, doesn't matter if it hits the side of the nets, but spin the ball as hard as you can, and then with sustained practice, the line and length will get, then you'll arrive at a place where you both have spin and line and length. Too many young bowlers get that line and length, but then they don't spin the ball. Then you're just a slow bowler. You're not a spin bowler. So I'd say spin the ball as hard as you can, spin it as hard as you can, spin it as hard as you can. If you maybe a bit more experience, I'd say some additional advice would be, don't be afraid to flight the ball. That's very important, and maybe that ties in with our previous point with the confidence thing. Don't be afraid to toss the ball up, get it above the batsman's eye. The batsman's head's got to move all over the place when you give him flight. It has all kind of advantages. It will make the ball spin more. It will make the batsman get out of line when he tries to play the ball. And you'll get more wickets. But you probably will go for a little more runs just by trying to get him on the front foot. You will go for a little more runs. But those three things I'd say is important. Spin the ball, flight the ball, and have confidence to let the batsman attack you.
Just want to bring you back to that second one about flighting the ball, because that's quite a common piece of advice that spinners hear when they're getting coached. Make sure you give the ball flight. But you can go too far with flight, just as you could go not far enough. So when you say flight, what does that mean? What does that mean to you? What would you say is sort of the ideal flight for a spinner to try and achieve?
Flight I define as getting the ball above the batsman's eye and then have it dip down on a drivable length. So, yes, you can toss the ball up high, but it will still be an easy full toss to play, or a ball that's too slow to play. So you want flight, but you want dip as well. So you get a lot of revolutions on the ball, toss it up above the batsman's eye, and really the optimal height is just the batsman's eye. The reason for this is it makes the batsman having to look up, and as the ball comes down, having to look down. So he's not looking at the ball coming straight at him. So he's having to move his head around, and that could cause him not to pick up the line. So that's the reason you're trying to get it above his eye. But you also don't want it slow. So you put a lot of revolutions on the ball to make a dip on him and come down on a drivable length.
So dip is where it appears to be a fuller length, and then it doesn't quite reach the length that it appears to be reaching, and it dips late in its flight and lands a bit shorter.
That's
than
correct.
The batsman thinks.
Exactly. You toss it up above his eye. He's probably expecting maybe a nice half volley or a full toss. And as he goes forward to drive this ball on the half volley and full toss, it dips in front of him and bounces a foot or two shorter than what he's expecting. So that's all kind of advantages, including that now it has time for the ball to spin and the batsman's not in position to play the shot because it's just shorter than what he thought it was going to be.
And that's really the perfect ball for any type of spinner, but it's quite difficult to bowl that ball every single time unless you're, Shane Warne or somebody like that. So how would you go about constructing a spell around the sort of ideal ball and the less than ideal balls? How would you go about that?
All right, constructing a spell, that's difficult. Like you say, unless you're Shane Warne and you're going to be bowling 15 overs and you can actually dictate to the captain when you want to bowl, it's out of your hands how long you're going to bowl. So especially for junior players, I'd say don't construct a spell for too long ahead because you don't know if you're going to be bowling six overs to a batsman. And also, if you plan six overs ahead, the batsman has already forgot what kind of deliveries he received from you six overs back. So there's no continuity. My advice usually to younger players is to plan 12 balls ahead. The reason is it will help you to focus on the deliveries better. Many young bowlers run up to the wicket and they don't actually know what they want to bowl. And by the time they get into delivery stride, they still don't know what they want to do. And there's no continuity in the thoughts and where they're actually going to pitch the ball. And that's a problem because when you run up, you need to focus visually on where you want to bowl the ball. So you need to decide before the time. Now, if you have 12 balls, you can say, okay, this batsman is poor outside off stump. So I'm going to bowl 11 balls outside off stump and mix it up a bit and throw in one quicker ball. Or if it's a new batsman, you might think, okay, I've got 12 balls. Let me bowl four slower balls, four average pace balls, and four quicker balls and see which balls he's struggling with. Once I've found that out, then you can focus. Is this batsman, if it's a left-hander and you're an off-spinner, is he bad outside of leg stump? Try and bowl him around the legs. Is he bad outside off stump? Try and focus there a bit more of your 12 balls. But I'd say focus on the 12 balls, mix it up in those 12 balls, and don't think further. I think, unless you're saying when you know you're going to be bowling 5 overs, 10 overs, just focus on the 12 balls, decide what you're going to bowl, and it will make you concentrate more when you deliver each delivery.
Thank you, Mano, for your time. If you're a spinner or a coach of spinners, then Spin Bowling Tips is the most comprehensive guide to spin bowling out there. So please visit www.pitchinstitution.com/academy to pick up a copy. Welcome to the listeners' question section for this week. David, our first question is from Prabhu, and he says, I'm already 20. If I start playing cricket now, will I get a chance to play for India? David, is it ever too late to start losing hope to play for your country?
In all likelihood, yes, it probably is too late if you're not even playing cricket when you get to 20. Now, the assumption is that he's not playing cricket at all, which would mean that, you know, to learn the skills from scratch, to learn the long barrier, to learn good catching technique, to learn the four defensive, those things are at age 20, you know, you should already know those basics. So to have a chance from scratch at age 20, I'd say is probably close to zero unless you're some kind of genius. Possible exceptions to that would be someone who has played cricket to some standard already and maybe they've gone away from the game and they've decided to come back to it. You know, if they've got the basics down and also they're quite talented, you know, they're quite athletic, they've got good hand-eye coordination, they're good at the basics, you know, the physical basics. You know, they've got the spatially aware, you know, they can pick up the line and length of the ball quite early. You know, those things which to some people come more naturally to others, then yeah, you've got an outside chance then. I mean, you're a long way behind already when you're at 20, because most people at 20 who go on to play international cricket are probably playing first class cricket.
Yeah.
Or certainly they're just about to play first class cricket. Mm-hmm. You don't see many international players who aren't playing first class cricket by the time they're 21. I think you know, an exception is somebody like Monty Panesar, who didn't really start playing first class cricket until he's 24, but that was only because he went to university. So, you know, he could have been playing first class cricket much younger if he wanted to, but he decided to go to university instead. So he didn't play a full season for Northamptonshire until he was 24. But that is an exception. You know, at 20, it's probably a bit late, however you look at it. Unless you are some kind of, you know, some kind of hidden genius. But if you were some kind of hidden genius, you probably wouldn't have given up playing cricket in the first place. So, yeah, you have to draw a line. The older you get, the sort of lower you have to set your sights. That doesn't mean you can't enjoy yourself, and it doesn't mean you can't play to a good standard of cricket. But you might have to give up your dreams of playing for India, and you might have to think to yourself, well, okay, you know, I will try and get to a good standard of club cricket and see where we go from there. I mean, you never know, of course, you never know. But you've got to be, as well as being hopeful, you've got to be realistic. You know, you can't you can't have the moon on the stick, as we say around here.
David, our next question is from Dino. And he says, a lot of the kids around my age, including myself, about 13 years old, get a lot of pain in the lower back on the left side. I'm currently having physio and I should be able to bowl again in 5 to 6 weeks. What causes these pains and how can I prevent getting this again? Now, David, whenever I hear lower back pain and bowling in the same sentence, I immediately think mixed action.
Yeah, I mean, it could be an injury. I mean, I don't want to go into specific details because A, I'm not a physiotherapist, and B, even if I was, I hadn't seen that particular person. So, you know, I don't want to talk about a specific injury, but what you can do is you can think about more general things. So as you say, you know, the mixed action is the first thing you want to look at. Are your hips and your shoulders lining up correctly? Because if your back's twisting, then yeah, you could be putting pressure on your lower back. So you've got to watch out for that. A mistake a lot of people make is they think, well, because I've got lower back pain, therefore I need to strengthen my lower back. And then they do all kinds of sort of lower back extension type exercises in the gym. That isn't really what your lower back is supposed to be doing when you're bowling. Yes, you do want to strengthen your lower back, or really what you want to strengthen is the core, which are the muscles around the lower back. But to specifically work on back, it might even make things worse if you're doing those kind of, you know, Superman type exercises and things like that. You can put a lot of compressive force on the spine. So first thing is make sure your technique is good, and you can go to Pitch Vision Academy. If you haven't got a coach that you trust, you can go to pitchvision.com/academy and you can upload a video there and you can get analysed by Matthew Nicholson, who is a former Australian bowler. and he'll analyse the technique and give you some drills and advice on what you need to do. The other thing is stretching. Make sure that you are you're stretching the hip joint in lots of different angles as much as you can. There's all different angles that you can be stretching the hips through. So make sure that you're stretching both active stretching before you play or you go to the gym, and active stretching is sort of stretches while you're moving. And then you've got passive stretching afterwards, which is the ones where you keep still and hold the stretch for 30 seconds or whatever it is. That makes a big difference, because the better the mobility of that joint, the less likely you are to get injured. And then, as I mentioned before, strengthening up the core. So again, for bowlers, the core is about stabilizing your back while your arms and legs are moving. So you don't necessarily want to do sit-ups or chin-ups, or crunches. You want to do things like the Palloff press, which I'll put a link to in the show notes. Exercises where you move your arms and your legs, but your core stays nice and firm and strong. So you're working the muscles that don't necessarily get worked when you're doing sit-ups or anything like that. And then make sure that you warm up properly. That's the other thing. Warm up as effectively as possible, because the better you warm up, the better your body is for bowling, and the less likely you are to get injured. And one more thing, if you are the type of person who sits around a lot, if you're young, then you know maybe you're sitting around a lot at school, you're not moving around much because you sat at a desk most of the day, then try and move around, just generally move around a bit more. If you're sitting down a lot, stand up half an hour or so, just even if it's to stretch your legs, just to go and grab a pen or a pencil, or you know, some, just find an excuse to stand up and move around a little bit, because moving around is just general moving around. I'm not talking about exercising, but just general moving around, it gets your body out of the fixed sitting position, which can lead to shortened hip flexors and weak hamstrings, but put those two things together and that can cause lower back pain. That's general talk. If you're worried about back pain, as in, you know, it's seriously painful, then the first thing you should do really is see a physiotherapist.
You can get more tips and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. Stay tuned for our next show on the 30th of October. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. From Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampad, signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.